The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And I want to start by going over, well, probably about to spend the whole day, I think, or the whole show going over some big stories going on in Germany right now. We're going to talk about some major defense moves in Europe, some, quote, colossal and unprecedented spending plans for France. We're going to talk about a new military headquarters for NATO for what has been referred to as lightning warfare that will be set up within Germany. We're going to talk about the German government's plans to be a bigger military power than Russia. But we're going to start with Germany's new coalition. It's central to a lot of the stories that we're going to be talking about today. So we'll start with an update. We've been following German politics very closely since the election, all the way back in September. We said at the time, we talked about how that could have some very dramatic results. And the fallout from that just continues. We're all the way back now in February, and there's still no government after we've just had months of drama, failed coalition talks. But Germany came a lot closer to that government last week. Not quite there. Some big obstacles, but they're a lot closer. And in doing this, I think German Chancellor Angela Merkel has done something that's pretty impressive. She's known as the big consensus builder. And she went in there trying to get a deal that would make everybody happy. And what she's achieved is almost as impressive. She certainly has united everybody in Germany, I think, to a certain extent with this coalition deal. She's managed to come up with a deal that makes everybody angry. All sides of the deal feel like it's a bad deal. All sides feel like they're getting a raw deal. So somehow, normally in a negotiation, you think at least one side would be happy. But this time, nobody is. So we'll start with the Social Democrats. This coalition deal is a deal between the right-wing Christian parties, the Christian Union Party, or the Christian Democratic Party and the Christian Democratic Union and the Christian Social Union. And then on the left, you've got the Social Democrats. Now, the Social Democrats got pummeled last election, their worst ever result in post-war history, and it's been downhill since then. Right now, they're just a couple of percentage points above the Alternative for Deutschland. So the Alternative for Deutschland, this brand new party that is viewed as extreme and beyond the pale by a lot of people, that has some individuals that have certainly been making some kind of far-right and almost neo-Nazi speeches, well, it's just within a whisker of being Germany's second largest partner. So because of that, the Social Democrats are not happy. And in fact, they're so angry that they've thrown out their party leader. Martin Schulz, he came in last election and he was the new golden boy for Germany. People were talking about him as the one that would unseat Merkel, solve all the Social Democratic Union problems. That was just about a year ago. He's gone. He's been thrown out. Just yesterday, he officially announced he was stepping down. I mean, basically, he knew going into this that this coalition was going to be so unpopular that he announced in advance, or he kind of let it be known, that he would step down as party leader because he didn't want his own personal unpopularity to derail the coalition deal. But he hoped as a consolation prize he would get Germany's foreign ministry. And that's what he hoped, and within just a couple of days, it was on Friday, it became clear that that wasn't going to happen. And that basically his political career, or at least this phase of it, is over. Not going to get the finance ministry, stepping down from the leadership position. So the Social Democrats, they've defenestrated their leader. They're now there's quite some division over who's going to succeed them next. Martin Schulz had his preferred successor. However, a lot of people kind of feel that, or the party grassroots feel like they're not being listened to, that the leaders are choosing who's going to lead the party and backward deals that they're not a part of. So a whole lot of infighting going on there. And that infighting and disagreement, that could still very well destroy the coalition deal. The Social Democratic Party has to vote on it, and it's anybody's guess what they're going to do. And it's not just, the party officials or parliamentarians that have to vote on it. They've promised they're going to hold a vote of the 400,000 or more party members, individual members of the party up and down the country. And so there's going to be a postal vote, and that could derail the whole thing. And we could see Germany's coalition crisis just continue because of that. So they're angry. Meanwhile, the CDU, the Christian Democratic Union, they're angry as well. They won the election. They're the largest party in the coalition. Yet somehow they have none of the big jobs. One senior CDU minister tweeted, well, at least we managed to keep the chancellor position. Because they feel like they've given everything else away. The Social Democrats, they have the finance ministry and the foreign ministry. These are the two big positions. Typically, the junior coalition partner gets one of those jobs because they are big positions, but they came away with both of them. They got the labor ministry too, and that's the government department that has the biggest budget. So that's a big beast. Then the other big job, the interior ministry, well, that went to the Christian Social Union, and they'll have an extra homeland portfolio there, and they're hoping to use that to really kind of shift to the right on migrants. We'll see how that happens. But the fact that the Christian Democrats gave away all of those big positions, well, that's caused a lot of unhappiness within the Christian Democratic Union parties. I'll just read some quotes for you. This is what Handelsblatt's editor-in-chief Andreas Kluth wrote. He wrote, "Many Christian Democrats are livid, feeling betrayed by their own chancellor. They will now search in earnest, albeit still discreetly, for a successor from their own ranks to take over from Miss Merkel as party leader and chancellor. She will be lucky if she survives politically for this full term." So there'll be a search in earnest for her successor. Lots of people wanting to get rid of her. Someone on Bloomberg View pointed out that another big reason why this will lead to instability is if you have ambitions to be Germany's next chancellor, well, typically you would want one of these big three cabinet posts, finance minister, foreign minister, or interior minister. And that's not available anymore now to wannabe successors for Angela Merkel for them to fight over. So that's going to that could increase some of the infighting and make people fight directly for the chancellorship. Spiegel Online, they also talked about the violent atmosphere within the Christian Democratic Union. They wrote that Merkel has sold the family silver to stay in power and stirred her erstwhile catatonic party, the Christian Democratic Union, into a potentially revolutionary fury. Her party is furious with her. They write that the anger at this time isn't limited to individual voices, as has traditionally been the case when it comes to criticisms of Merkel. Her ability to constantly keep a tight lid on possible intra-party uprising has long been a hallmark of her tenure, but that lid appears to have come ajar. So that's fighting, that party infighting, starting to come out into the open. Now, Angela Merkel on Sunday, she was forced out to come out on national television and defend some of these agreements. And didn't really help much. The Handelsblatt wrote in their morning briefing the next morning that Merkel's cameo didn't do what she's intended. The bomb she hoped to defuse is still ticking. So a ticking time bomb with Germany's ruling party after this coalition result. And they wrote that now the curtain slowly drops on the Chancellor's political career. That's what we're seeing now, the curtain slowly dropping. Angela Merkel's party out for a new leader. The knives are out. A revolutionary fury. So a lot of dissatisfaction within the Christian Democratic Union. as well. But perhaps the most important fury or anger that's building in Germany doesn't come from any of these political parties. It comes from those concerned for the safety of their families, for their jobs. After Angela Merkel's unprecedented experiment with mass migration. And this is, you know, this is the big dangerous anger that's building up in Germany now, is people feel like whatever we vote for, we get the same thing. You know, we didn't like what was going on with the coalition. We didn't like some of these immigration policies. So Angela Merkel's party gets a historically terrible election result. The Social Democratic Party get their worst result in post-war history. But what happens as a result of that? You still get a coalition of those two parties that just got punished so badly. So people start to think, well, it doesn't matter who you vote for at the end of the day, you know, Merkel wins. It's like the saying over here about football or soccer. I think it was some football commentator said, football is a pretty simple game. You have 11 men on each side, run around for 90 minutes, and at the end of the day, Germany wins. Well, German politics is rapidly becoming a game where you have five or six political parties and people choose who they want to vote for, and at the end of the day, Merkel wins. And so that is leading to growing anger against not just Angela Merkel, but just Germany's whole political system. People feel that they can't, that they're very concerned about policies, but they cannot change them. And that's turning people against traditional political parties and towards parties like the Alternative for Deutschland. Now, not everybody who is angry with Angela Merkel is going to vote for the Alternative for Deutschland. Some are going to be put off by those more extreme politicians. You know, others will just, it'll be a difference of strategy, so maybe they've got a better chance of getting their own way by sticking with the CDU or the CSU. But you've got so many moving to this party. Like I said, they're just 2% away from being Germany's largest political party. You've got other signs, things like Germany's gun sales hitting record heights. And that's a big deal. I don't have the gun ownership stats with me right now, but this is something that's much rarer than in the United States. Buying a gun in Europe, it's not as simple as just showing up at a shop and saying, well, I want to buy that gun. I mean, I know it's not that simple in the United States either, but the point is it's more complicated. You know, in the UK, at least, you've got to have the police come out and talk to you, inspect where you want to keep your guns. There's a whole license procedure to fill in, and that's just for a shotgun. For something like a handgun, the procedure is even more complicated. So it's a big deal if people are going to buying more guns. It's not something that people do on a whim. It's an indication of a serious rise in fear. Now, if this coalition does go through, the Alternative for Deutschland will become the main opposition party, the biggest political party that's not included in the coalition. And that gives them lots of speaking time. It gives them the leadership of a lot of committees, significant positions on a lot of committees in the Bundestag. So they're going to be on German TV and the media a lot more now. They're going to be, if you're watching, say, a recording of the German parliament, they're going to be in pride of place in terms of those that are criticizing Angela Merkel. They'll be the main ones against her. They're going to be the, if you don't like Angela Merkel, well, they're going to be now the most visible alternative. So this is posing some real challenges for Germany's coalition. Now, so you've got, on the one hand, if this coalition deal is approved, you would basically have this really unpopular coalition that everybody dislikes, and somebody like the Alternative for Deutschland as the main alternative and the most prominent alternative to it. Now, this is why Germany is building towards a political crisis. It's facts like this that mean actually there's quite a lot of commentators that are saying, well, it's actually going to be better for Germany if the Social Democrats torpedo this coalition deal. They're looking at it and saying, well, if we get this coalition, first of all, it's a big if it can survive for the next 4 years. I guess it's 3.5 now. They've already whittled down so much at the time that they would be in government. That's a big if. Because it's so unpopular, because it's so divided, because really there's every incentive for somebody to kind of storm out in a huff early from this coalition deal, because all the parties know, you know, if we don't do anything different to what we've done last time, well, we're going to have another very tricky election result next time we hold elections. But then commentators are looking at it and saying, well, even if they keep going for 4 years, you're just going to be in an even worse position than we are now, because none of the problems, none of the dissatisfaction with Germany's political system, none of this unhappiness that, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for, you just get the vaguely centre-right, centre-left deal, none of that is dealt with in this coalition. So if it's allowed to continue, every problem that Germany's politics has is just going to get worse. This coalition is just another dose of what has caused this problem in the first place. And so that's why there are quite a few saying, well, we hope this falls apart. Over the next few weeks, we'll find out if Germany is going to, well, if it's going to get a coalition that nobody likes, or whether it's all going to fall apart and just the more immediate crisis is going to continue. Either way, the stage remains perfectly set for the radical change in German politics that we've been warning about at the trumpet. I mean, think about, say, even if they do get this coalition together, you're going to have a coalition built on this really shaky foundation with cracks that could just explode when time gets tough. I mean, it's like the parable of the house built upon the sand. When times are good, you don't necessarily notice that it's built upon the sand. That doesn't matter so much. But when the winds come, when the storm comes, when you're in crisis, it just collapses. And there's a real danger that you could end up with a German coalition government that just collapses at the worst possible moment. I mean, take the euro crisis. We've talked quite a bit on this show about how that is fundamentally not solved, how Greece is still in crisis. You've got the potential for crisis in Italy. And that's something that's really dangerous for Europe because they just don't have the money to bail Italy out. The causes of the euro crisis have not been addressed, only in just the tiniest part. So let's say over the next 4 years, you have another outbreak of the euro crisis. And probably a lot sooner than that, but that's something that is pretty likely. How would this German coalition deal with it? Well, you have the Social Democrats now in charge of the finance ministry. And they've talked about, they've said, well, we're not going to boss European countries around. They're talking about being more helpful, say, to other European countries, being more generous with Germany's money. And fine, you know, they control the finance ministry. But at the same time, that thinking is absolutely anathema to the Christian Democratic Union and the Conservatives, that they do not want other countries to have easy access without heavy strings attached to Germany's taxpayers' money and to bailout. So you could see something like this happens, the crisis hits, Germany's finance minister steps in and says, yes, we're going to open up Germany's purse strings to this. We'll bail out and no strings attached. We're not going to lecture European nations on how to spend their budgets now. If they did that, well, the Alternative for Deutschland would be livid. That's what started the Alternative for Deutschland in the first place. The Christian Democratic Union would be livid. And you'd immediately have a split. And you would have people, potentially even like Wolfgang Schäuble, who's the party leader, who is the person who could really just, you know, bring down Angela Merkel at the drop of the hat, probably seriously considering doing just that. And so you could quickly even have the coalition, you know, everybody turns to Germany's leadership in this moment of crisis, and then the coalition just dissolves in infighting because they're not agreed over these big issues. That's just one example. I mean, how many crises have hit Europe completely out of left field that nobody has anticipated over the last few years? So you could get this election crisis or this unstable coalition that wobbles on for a bit and then at the worst possible time falls apart and drops Europe in a crisis even worse than anything it's ever seen over the last decade. That's a real possibility for Germany. And this is exactly the kind of possibility that the trumpet has been warning about. Warning about for years. Daniel chapter 8 talks about a king of fierce countenance rising up in Europe. So we see this anger building in Germany. The Bible tells us well, it's leading to this fierce king. Daniel 11 and verse 21, it talks about this strong leader coming into power by flatteries. Mr. Flurry, in his booklet, or Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry, in his booklet, A Strong German Leader is Imminent, he wrote that the way this verse is worded, you know, it's saying that he'll get in probably not by votes, but through a coalition government of some kind. We need to watch Germany and Europe carefully, he adds. He's been saying all the way back since the 90s, watch for Germany to have an unstable coalition, because that really matches the picture that the Bible paints us of when this strong leader comes into power. And you look at German politics right now and where they are after this coalition agreement last Wednesday, after the elections, that's the situation perfectly, described perfectly. Something dangerous and revolutionary is underway in Europe. This fierce king could arrive almost any day. I mean, we don't know exactly how it's going to play out, whether the Social Democratic members will torpedo this coalition and this immediate crisis will continue, whether they'll form this unstable coalition and that will lead to this leader coming into power. But just the whole situation right now matches exactly what the Bible says. Now, we have a trends article on our website, Why the Trumpet Watches the Rise of a German Strongman. And that takes you just step by step through these prophecies. It will show you, prove to you, that these scriptures that I'd quoted today, just in passing, from Daniel 8, from Daniel 11, it will prove to you that these are indeed referring to the end time, that they are referring to the time we're living in now, that they are referring to modern Europe. And actually, you can read, if you have a red letter Bible, you can read from Jesus Christ himself that he states that these prophecies in Daniel refer to a time before his return. He says that himself. If you're a Christian, maybe you're not used to the idea of Bible prophecy, or maybe it sounds a little strange, but those are the words of Jesus Christ. You can read that in Matthew 24, in Luke 21, I think it is, where he says, he talks about these times spoken of by Daniel the prophet. He says, watch for that. Watch for these prophecies spoken of by Daniel the prophet to be fulfilled. Because when they are, that means my return is near. So that article will take you through step by step and show you that these prophecies refer to this end time. And it'll also show you, like I just alluded to, that actually just about all of these prophecies that talk about this strong man in Europe rising, they also are full of hope. They talk about what is going to come after this strongman. So this could set up a lot of anger right now, a lot of people getting fed up of the way it's going, and that ultimately is where it's leading. Well, I'll take a quick break now. When we get back, we'll talk about some other important news that's been going on, because not everything is just on hold waiting for this next German leader. There's some other very important, very prophetically significant news going on in Europe. In one case, even going on today while you're listening to this show. So tune in, keep listening, and we'll be right back in just about a minute or so.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that, at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Now, we've been talking about Germany's coalition agreement and just about the state of politics within Germany right now. I wanted to draw attention to some significant parts of that coalition agreement. Yes, it may not be implemented, but even so, this still tells us a lot about the priorities of the German parties. And there's also still a good chance that it may be implemented and that we may get this government come in. And there's some very important things in this coalition agreement. Now, I'm sure you've heard about, we've talked about a fair bit on this show, how Donald Trump wants Germany to spend 2% on its military. He wants all of Europe, well, all of NATO, to spend 2% of their economy on their military. That's something that they should have been doing anyway. They promised to do in that NATO agreement. But this is making a really big difference already in Europe. The Telegraph had an article last week. This is talking about France and their changes that they're making because of Donald Trump. And their headline is France to boost defense spending in unprecedented move to meet NATO commitments. They write, France has unveiled plans to boost defense spending by more than a third between 2017 and 2025 in an unprecedented effort, and that's in quotes, to meet NATO commitments and modernize its army and nuclear deterrence. So massive defense spending in Europe. Le Monde called the defense spending boost colossal. Colossal. So big changes already afoot. This article talks about, it says, presenting the multi-year military spending plan, the defense ministry said it would pump just under 300 billion euros into bolstering its armed forces between 2019 and 2025, after already raising its budget by 1.8% to 34.3 billion euros this year. So the defense ministry, they said that, well, they called it an unprecedented budgetary effort to produce a full defense capability, a modern, powerful force that is responsive and looks to the future. Now, in Germany, the Social Democrats that are getting ready to be part of this government, they campaigned actually on not increasing Germany's defense spending to the 2%. I think they still said, OK, well, yeah, we can have some increase, but we don't need to be spending 2%. That's too much. However, in the German coalition agreement does commit to these NATO standards. It says that it will follow the target corridor of the agreements in NATO. So that's an agreement in the coalition agreement to increase spending to 2% by 2024. So even though the Social Democrats campaigned against it, they have agreed to that in this coalition. So they didn't get their own way on absolutely everything. But Germany's response, the section, there's a section in the I think it's about 171 pages, but in this coalition agreement, there's a section there called Germany's Responsibility for Peace, Freedom and Security Around the World. And that's actually the longest section. I think it's about 20 pages or so. And you know, that's where that plan is, to increase defense spending by 2%. And it's easy to kind of say, oh yeah, defense spending by 2%, and not think about what that means. Germany spending 2% on its military is a big deal for Europe. The EU Observer had a great article talking about this. This was about a year ago, called Should Europeans Spend More on Defense? And they made some great points. They talked about that, for example, if Germany spends 2% of its GDP, of its economy, on its military, they write that Germany would outspend Russia and become the fourth largest military power in the world. They've got Europe's biggest economy. They're a huge economy and a growing economy. And so if they're spending 2% of that economy on their defense, well, that means they're automatically going to be a huge military power as well. I think right now they spend around 1.2%, 1.3%. So you're looking at something that's not too far off doubling its military spending. That's a big deal within Europe. And they've already made plans for increasing their defense spending. Once that happens, the German army is going to be bigger, or the German military is going to be bigger than the British armed forces. And this article from EU Observer last year, it continues, what would the standoff over Greek debt or the EU's asylum policies look like if Germany were not just an economic powerhouse, but also wield real military might? How would it shape the country's relations with the Czech Republic, which expelled 2.5 million ethnic Germans from the Sudetenland after World War II? And what about with Poland? If Europeans are to spend more on defence, they need to be careful to do it in a way that does not resuscitate the continent's old demons. Now, that's a great point. It's going to completely change all of power relations of Europe if everyone knows that Germany's sitting there with this real military might. But that's what Germany's coalition agreement, it's a little oblique. It's definitely not the headline item, but that's what it says it's going to be doing. There's some other very interesting points in this military section. It talks about Germany wanting to, quote, further develop the mandate for the comprehensive stabilization and sustained combating of ISIS terrorism. So it's going to be more involved in the Middle East. It talks about increasing the number of soldiers in Afghanistan, of continuing its military mission in Mali, and it wants to raise the upper limit on the number of soldiers it has over there. And again, I think Germany's really got a strategy of turning Mali into a staging post for any potential expansion, military expansion across North Africa. They're training them. They're leading the EU training mission to train the Malian army. They're leading the EU military to train the army, the Malian police force. They've got several hundred soldiers there, and you've got key German generals have talked about using Mali as a base from which to move into Libya if they need to, or the rest of North Africa. You know, they're talking about using Mali in that way. This has been a major change in Germany already over the last decade or so. You know, for the longest time, the German army was just about never deployed abroad. Then in the 90s, they were in Kosovo and in places down there. And now they're getting increasingly involved in North Africa, in the Middle East. And this document calls for that to continue and even intensify. So we're seeing just this continued role of the German army on the world scene. This document also calls for Europe to continue working Germany to continue working with Europe. In fact, it calls outright for a European army in black and white. And very interestingly, it calls on it being more independent from the US. It has this interesting statement where it says, we want to remain transatlantic and become more European. So an interesting dichotomy there, but they write, it states, let me find the full quote here. Ah, there we go. This is from a section called A New Beginning for Europe, and it states that the global balance of forces has changed fundamentally over recent years, politically, economy, and militarily. New areas of interest for the US and the strengthening of China and Russia's policies make it clear that Europe must take its fate into its own hands more than it has done in the past. Only together does the EU have an opportunity to assert itself in the world and enforce its current interests. So because of that, because of this, it's got Angela Merkel talked about last year. It was very famous when she talked about Germany having to take on, or Europe having to walk its own path, not being able to rely on other countries as much, take its fate into its own hands. It was almost a paraphrase, and that was a big deal when she said it. And now that's right there in Germany's coalition agreement, taking its fate into its own hands more than it has done in the past. So it talked about strengthening or determined and substantial foreign security development and human rights policy from a single source within Europe. It talks about this new military agreement, PESCO, that Europe signed in December that will really help them spend more on their military, work together more on their military, and start building some of these combined projects. It talked about strengthening that. It called for a properly equipped EU headquarters to lead civilian and military missions. So a call for a European headquarters. And then it also called for an army of Europeans. It said, I'll read the quote. It says, it calls for expanding the European Defence Union with PESCO, European Defence Funds, and further steps on the way to the army of Europeans. So that's what they're marching towards, creating this army of Europeans. Now, we have an article in the latest Trumpet print edition. I might talk about that a little more later, called Europe's Underground Army, that Josué Michels and I wrote on the way that Germany is leading these efforts. And as you can see from here, they don't make a secret of where the destination is. I mean, admittedly, it's not, say, a subhead title. They don't go out of their way to draw attention to it either. But it's very clear this is where they see these directions going, or these projects leading. Now, another very important piece of news on this front came today. NATO defense ministers, they're meeting in Brussels today, right now. And, well, just to introduce this story, here's Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, introducing the meeting to the press yesterday.
Later in the day, we will take decisions to modernize NATO's command structure to ensure our 29 nations can act as one quickly and effectively. I expect we will agree to establish a new joint force command for the Atlantic. This will focus on protecting sea lines of communication between North America and Europe, as well as critical infrastructure. The command will play a crucial role in crisis and conflict. 80% of SACEUR's area of responsibility is covered by water. And we need to stay ahead of potential threats, both on sea and under it. I expect we will agree to establish a new support command to improve the rapid movement of troops and equipment within Europe. This is a key part of our collective deterrence and defense. Fair burden sharing is also crucial for our shared security. Allies agreed in 2014 to move towards investing 2% of GDP.
So NATO is looking at setting up these new command centers. There'll be the Atlantic Command that's going to look at keeping the Atlantic Ocean free. And I think that's they're talking about setting up in Canada. But then also they're looking at setting up this rapid deployment center. And that, I don't know whether it's completely agreed yet, but they're talking about setting that up in Germany. And that's been in the works for going in Germany for a while. And I think we should hear the official decision on that today. But it certainly seems very likely they'll be setting this up in Germany. And German Foreign Policy had a great article talking about this and what this means. Just on their website today, they wrote that this will enable lightning fast deployment in the future, especially in Eastern and Southeastern Europe, for which NATO forces from Western Europe and North America must be brought across the European continent in the immediate vicinity of the Russian border in the shortest possible time. A German location for the new headquarters has already been proposed by the federal government last year, and it has been advocated for some time by the United States. The then commander of the U.S. Army in Europe, Ben Hodges, he says, I cannot imagine any other country that is better suited than Germany. So it looks like they're going to get this center for lightning fast deployment across Europe. Now, at the same time, the EU itself is looking at making it easier to move troops across Europe. They've set up a headquarters for the movement of material and troops in Europe. Or they're setting that up to try and make it easier. They're trying to look at, making sure they've got routes on paper that they can move very heavy tanks across so they don't end up getting stuck at some bridge that isn't heavy enough to hold or isn't strong enough to hold them. They're working on what's called a military Schengen. So you've got this area where troops can move across easily and quickly. And the EU Transport Commissioner, Violeta Bulk, they've started work in the EU Transport Commission or calling for... in the planning, new routes, transport routes with roads, railway ports and airports that give military need a priority. And when they're building these and setting this up, and they're working with this through PESCO as well that we talked about. So they're looking at this headquarters for lightning warfare being set up in Germany. Now, what's interesting, at the same time as this is happening, there are a few in the US that are starting to become worried about Europe becoming military independent from the United States. Now, we've been talking about that for a long time here at The Trumpet. And generally, nobody in America has been worried about that. But now there are a few that are just starting to get worried that Europe's becoming a little too militarily independent or moving in that way from the US and from NATO. And when you think about those quotes that we read from the German coalition agreement, well, you can see why they would have that concern. So the Financial Times on Monday, they had an article, US fears closer EU defense ties could undermine NATO. They wrote, the US is concerned that EU plans for closer defense ties between the bloc's members risks undermining NATO as the alliance confronts a resurgent Russia. We don't want to see EU efforts pulling requirements or forces away from NATO and into the EU. And they quote Katie Wilbarger saying that, a senior Pentagon official, they write, who covers NATO. They also quote from they quote from Thomas Vavasek, who's a director of Carnegie Europe and a former Slovak ambassador to NATO. And he says that while any efforts to push back against what the EU is doing here and against EU common defense, well, he says that would be a waste of time and energy. He says that ship has sailed. It's too late. If you want to stop Europe creating a combined military that's independent of NATO or independent of the US, it's too late. That ship sailed. He writes that the first George W. Bush administration spent 4 years trying to block EU defense policy. And before concluding, he says rightly that it's better to channel the initiative than to stop it. So you can't stop it. So you've got to just try and keep it anchored to America. There was another article, this one from Agency France Presse yesterday. NATO chief warns EU over defense pact. So this was from Jens Stoltenberg, and he's warning that the EU's new defense pact must not undermine the alliance. Just quoting from AFP, as US officials voice fresh concerns about the flagship initiative. The European Union launched the scheme with great fanfare in December, touting it as a way to get member states to work more closely post-Brexit and spend more efficiently on defense projects. But the plan has come under fire in recent days from US officials who fear it could draw resources away from NATO and even become a, quote, protectionist umbrella for European defense manufacturers. So US officials, they're starting to worry that it's just going to draw resources away from NATO and draw Europe away from the United States. Like I said, well, you look at some of those statements about Europe going on its own way, of having to move away from America that are in the NATO agreement, or the German coalition agreement, sorry. Well, you can see why they're worried. But these officials should have been worried some time ago. That ship has sailed now. Now, this is an important point to note in context of this NATO headquarters, because German foreign policy bring out some really interesting points about exactly how this headquarters is set up. And actually, it's set up so that Germany can take it away from NATO and use it as an EU headquarters instead, if that's what they decide they want to do. They write that according to recent reports, the new headquarters is not firmly integrated into the command structure of the NATO command structure, NCS, but is built and operated under German sovereignty. It would thus be part of the NATO force structure, which, as the Bundeswehr puts it, consists of the national and multinational armed forces of the member states. They write that their facilities can be incorporated into NATO's command and decision-making structures under contractually agreed conditions. German foreign policy goes on to write, in the case of the new headquarters, however, it would also be possible to use it for military purposes outside of NATO. For example, the Army of Europeans Berlin wants to build, according to the recently published coalition agreement of the current desired government of the CDU, CSU, and SPD, SDP. SPD got there in the end. This would give Berlin maximum political flexibility for the use of the new facility. So they can use it with NATO if they want, and they may well want. I mean, NATO so far has worked great for Europe. It's a way of them getting, in a lot of ways, American military might doing what they want to do. You know, America helping break up the Balkans. And then Europe comes in and incorporates some of those members into the European Union. They're looking at now bringing more of those members in, or those nations, into the European Union. That's just been laid out over the last few days. I think at first, initially, after Yugoslavia broke up, they were content to bring in just those nations like Croatia that they kind of really wanted, and with that crucial Adriatic coastline into the European Union. Something like Serbia that has no Adriatic coastline, I think they were kind of just content to let that drift. Now, though, Russia and China are looking at increasing their influence in that region. So Europe is more in a hurry to start bringing those countries back or to Europe, to into the EU, to make sure they have control there. So that was an example. Back then, they really benefited from NATO. And so as long as Germany keeps benefiting in that way, well, I'm sure they'll be happy to have the EU as a NATO headquarters, that headquarters that they have as a NATO headquarters. But if they move to working with the EU military much more, well, then they can shift that headquarters over and make that a European headquarters instead of a NATO one. So they're setting up this headquarters that could really be used in helping an EU military. And, well, it's certainly going to be used, even as you read from German foreign policy there, about helping Europe's militaries move with lightning speed. So there is a lot of prophecies in play right now. And we're moving towards, as we talked about in the first segment, this prophesied German strongman. Events are moving quickly to his arrival. But at the same time, it's not like everything is just on hold waiting for that strongman, or that other prophecies have stalled. We're still moving towards these other important prophecies in the meantime. There's a lot happening here behind the scenes. We'll just take one more quick break. And then when we get back, we'll talk about some of the history here in Germany of building up these type of militaries behind the scenes.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And we've been talking about, well, a lot of different pieces of news out of Germany, but a lot of them relate to building up a European military. And you know, this is something that there's been a lot of news over the past few years on, one of the major important stories, but it's not one that's been covered a lot. And a lot of it has kind of been going on underground. And that's exactly the way Germany has a history of working. Just to recap some of the other developments in recent years that we didn't talk about in the first half, and we mentioned PESCO, this new cooperation agreement signed last December. Also, Germany is working on a network of training facilities. Spiegel Online, they wrote in December, it will be years before Europe becomes a true defense union, but German Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen does not want to wait for that to happen. For a long time, the CDU politician has been working on the Euro Army and pushing forwards the network of Bundeswehr troops and their European partners. So they've been working on these training facilities, German troops train in 55 facilities across Europe. There are 24 training facilities in Germany that are open to other nations. So they're getting ready to be able to work together as a common military with these different networks from all across Europe. And Spiegel Online was writing last month about how, or just towards the end of last year, how that was happening behind the scenes. You've got major initiatives with just huge chunks of other armies coming into the German army, into the Bundeswehr. So 2/3 of basically the Dutch land forces are under German command, are in the Bundeswehr. They've been moving over to the Bundeswehr over the last few years. That process is almost complete. So the great majority of their armed forces are nearly under German command right now. They serve in German brigades in the German command structure. And then you've got other nations looking at that and saying, well, we like that idea too, because Germany helps pay the cost for our troops. They move into the German army. So we get defense. We get the German army helping in our defense, and we save some money. So there, other nations are doing that as well. The Czech Republic, they have 2 combat brigades in total, and they're moving one of those into the German army. Romania moving over its mechanized brigade into the German army. And these, you know, brigades, they're different sizes in different armies, but these aren't small token forces. Like I said, the Czech Republic, well, they only have 2 combat brigades, and they're moving one of them into the German army. They typically include several thousand soldiers. Poland is experimenting with sharing a battalion, a smaller force, but still very significant. And in 2006, von der Leyen, the German defense minister, she said that Germany hopes to create a multinational panzer division this way. Die Welt talked about how this would form the nucleus of a European army. We read in the German coalition agreement how that Germany says, well, everything that we're doing, they're steps towards an army of Europe. So big steps, but this is something that Germany has done before. And it's something that the Bible talked about in very precise language. Revelation chapter 17, it talks about a power that goes underground and emerges from the underground. Revelation 17 and verse 8, it describes a beast power, a symbol of a major world power. It says that this power was and is not. It's a power that's there, and then it vanishes, and then it, quote, ascends out of the bottomless pit. It comes from nowhere. It comes from underground. It builds its power underground. Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry, he wrote this about it in his book Prophesy Again. During World War II, we saw the Hitler-Mussolini axis, but then it disappeared from the scene. It was not. And yet God says it is. The Axis powers lost the war, but as Mr. Armstrong preached time and time again, they just went underground into the bottomless pit. They're still there. They're just underground. God says after that happens, they're just going to ascend right back up. And that perfectly describes Germany over the years. I mean, that's what's happening now. You could say in so many ways that a European army is already here. It's called the Bundeswehr. They have 3 other nations with significant troops serving in them. They're well on the way to forming this European army. But they have quite a history of doing just that. I mean, most notably, you had the Treaty of Versailles after World War I, limiting the size of the German armed forces. And so what did Germany do? Well, in 1922, it signed the Treaty of Rapallo with Russia that contained a secret clause for Germany to carry out military research, development, and training, all outlawed by Versailles, in Russia. And then in exchange, you know, Russia would share in the military advances that came from this. And so Germany built secret and illegal arms development factories in Russia, officer training facilities in Russia. Paul Johnson, in his book Modern Times, wrote that this allowed Germany to maintain a continuity of skills, which, when the time was ripe, could once more be openly exploited back at home. Now, there were some details in the press. The Manchester Guardian especially deserves an honourable mention for keeping an eye on and publicising some of the details of what was happening. Germany's Social Democrats published certain parts of the secret parts of this treaty, but a lot of it remained secret. And there was just this covert, Paul Johnson writes, a strange covert alliance was formed, which only occasionally broke surface. So again, it was underground. And there are other ways this went on underground. Versailles limited Germany to 100,000 strong army. And so Germany turned it into an army of officers. Now, it also limited Germany to an army of 4,000 commissioned officers, but there was no limit on non-commissioned officers. And so by 1922, half of that army were non-commissioned officers. Half the army, officers. 1926, well, just ordinary private soldiers were in the minority. Just little over a third of the army. This was well before then. All of this, you know, we're talking about 1922. They were working on this underground well before the Nazis came along. So some of the things that happened at that time period, it wasn't just the Nazis. Around the same time, they were training pilots at the Lipetsk Air Base in Russia. They were training pilots in civilian glider clubs, even though they were forbidden to train an air force. So then starting around 1927, again, well before the Nazis, the German army begins making concrete plans for a rapid expansion, for getting the infrastructure ready that would be necessary to support a modern mechanized military. Then the Nazis came in 1933. Germany announced plans to expand its army, to break with the Versailles limit and expand it to 300,000 soldiers. And then just 6 years later, it was almost 10 times the size. So much of this went on underground, and then, you know, boom, it just exploded onto the surface really quickly. And this is just one of the more recent examples of this. The Italian journalist Luigi Barzini has a very interesting, pretty entertaining book as well called The Europeans. And he goes over different nations in Europe. And he talks about this sudden eruption from nowhere of military strength. And he talks about it as just being a common occurrence in German history. His whole chapter on Germany is on this changeable facet of its history. He talks about the nation, about transformations, about the nation hibernating at times. You know, for example, at the time of Napoleon, well, Napoleon repeatedly beat German states easily. Before then, you know, Germany was really the terror of Europe under Frederick the Great. Frederick, well, one of the Fredericks anyway. But at the time of Napoleon, well, people kind of wrote the Germans off as militarily useless. Then Barzini wrote, then as you turned a few pages in the history book, the Germans suddenly appeared, completely transformed. They crossed the border of France as a grey tide of faceless, disciplined soldiers with spiked helmets, a relentless, unstoppable war machine. Where had they come from? Only a few Germans and no foreigners had suspected what the imminent metamorphosis would be like. So again, the military power going underground. And so it's because of these prophecies that Herbert W. Armstrong, right from May 9th, 1945, that was just a day or two after the end of World War II, ended. He's saying, well, Germany, they're going to go underground. He used that word, underground. They're going to come back. And you saw this happen. In 1996, the US declassified a document written in 1944 showing plans to go underground. You've got people like Major General Reinhard Gehlen, who commanded the Wehrmacht's Foreign Army's East Military Intelligence Unit, that clearly made plans to go underground. There were plans and even events in the 50s building armies when Germany wasn't allowed to have an army. And then you see this policy just continue with the way Germany is quietly building a European military. Revelation 17 and verse 8 describes exactly what the character of this power throughout history and exactly what's going on right now. That's why you need to watch, and we watch Germany carefully, because a lot of this is happening underground and it is starting to emerge now. It is starting to come out more and more in focus, but it's a power that has so often been underground. Now, you can read more about this. Well, Mr. Flurry's booklet, Prophesy Again, it talks about this. Our booklet, Germany's Conquest of the Balkans, is a great example of that coming out from the underground. But that's why we need to watch Germany closely. Now, the rest of that chapter in Revelation 17, it talks about this European power leading to the return of Jesus Christ, it being beaten by Jesus Christ himself. So that's the good news from watching this. And that's the good news that we can get and just to even see proven before our eyes as we see these prophecies proven true and coming to pass. before our eyes. The Bible's just been stunningly accurate in forecasting and describing the underground nature of the way this power rises in Europe. You can read more about that as well, more details in that article from the Trumpet Print, Europe's Underground Army. That's about it from me. Thanks for listening. This has been the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG, on kpcg.fm, 101.3 on the FM dial. Tune in tomorrow where Mr. Stephen Flurry should be back, hosting here live from Edstone, England.